I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Karen Brown. Thanks for checking out the Mississippi Edition podcast. If you like what you hear, click subscribe, hit like, or leave us a comment if your app has that feature. Then find other MPB podcasts by searching MPB Think Radio on your favorite podcasting platform. Thanks. Good morning. It's 8:30 on Tuesday, October 5th. I'm Karen Brown, and this is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. On today's show, a prominent pediatrician in the state pounds the table for Medicaid expansion. Then the state economist peers into his crystal ball, and we return to our series on diabetes in Mississippi. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio. Earlier this year, Dr. John Gaudet, who's the former president of the Mississippi chapter of the Academy of Pediatrics, spearheaded a ballot initiative aimed at expanding Medicaid in the state. The effort was scrapped when the state Supreme Court ruled that the initiative process was unconstitutional. Now, Dr. Gaudet is applying pressure to Mississippi lawmakers to put forth legislation aimed at expanding health care access. Gaudet spoke yesterday with Kobe Vance.
There is momentum. You have people from all walks of life coming together, talking about the benefits that healthcare provides. For instance, people who have a chronic or a longstanding condition, for them to get treatment and be healthier will make them productive citizens and contribute to our society, both in the work that they do and in through paying taxes. And also, when you look at Mississippians' tax dollars that we pay, right now those tax dollars are being diverted to other states to pay for their Medicaid expansion. So when you look at it from a healthcare standpoint, an economic standpoint, really no matter how you look at it, Medicaid expansion is just going to be a plus for Mississippi. And I think people are beginning to realize that, and the groundswell is now turned into a tidal wave, and we are hearing more and more citizens talking about it, advocating for it, and I believe that our elected officials will see this and notice this and listen to this, and we'll be able to make progress on this during the regular legislative session.
On the economics, would Mississippians be seeing a large increase in taxes if this were passed?
Kobe, that's a good question. And it's been said that healthcare expansion is going to cost something. It's not free, and it would be foolish for anyone to say that it's free. The federal government has put in lots of perks and incentives and sweeteners, so to speak, in order to make it more attractive, in order to mitigate or to diminish those costs. And then you also have to look at the benefits that can be reaped from healthcare expansion. For instance, having people be less likely to have unmanaged or poorly managed chronic illnesses, women having their babies closer to term, less likely to be premature, mental health care coverage, creating fewer crises. So there will be savings. So we are asking our lawmakers to, yes, look at the costs, keep in mind the incentives that the federal government has put in there, but also look at the savings on the back end. And when you take and look at it in the whole picture, then the benefits outweigh those costs.
What would healthcare expansion or healthcare access expansion look like for rural areas in Mississippi?
Our rural areas have the most gain because in a little town, the hospital is probably either the biggest employer or one of the biggest employers. Many in rural areas, if there's not a big factory or a large employer, many of the jobs may be lower paying. But if you look at the jobs that are available in the hospital, somebody with, let's say, a nursing degree or a management degree, can get a good job. And so the hospitals, in order to survive, need their patients to have coverage of some kind. So if someone comes in needing a surgery or an emergency room visit or an x-ray of some kind, many of these things are really too expensive for your average American to be able to just write a check for. Insurance is needed to help that to get covered. And if everyone walking through the door had coverage, then these rural hospitals would be in much better financial shape. And there's a risk that some of these rural hospitals might not be able to remain financially viable if they're seeing a lot of patients who are uninsured. Then patients who do have insurance will have to drive further to go to the hospital if there's an emergency. Of course, the patients who don't have insurance won't have insurance, and they'll have even more difficult access. And the community would lose one of its most reliable employers. And hospitals not only employ people, but they also purchase things, supplies. They are also an economic driver in a community. So I think the rural areas really stand to gain the most from expanding healthcare.
Going into this upcoming legislative session and the conversations doctors will have with lawmakers, do you think the pandemic is going to play a big part in that?
I mean, this issue existed prior to the pandemic, and I think the pandemic has exposed healthcare disparities. Now you see a bigger divide between the rich and the poor, or the urban and the rural, and the curtain has been pulled back, and these disparities exist and are easily seen. And expanding healthcare through federal programs, such as through the state plan amendment, through Medicaid, or the Section 1115 waivers to expand healthcare. All of this existed prior to the pandemic, but I'm hoping that these disparities that have been exposed will be a real eye-opener. And also talking to lawmakers, it shouldn't just be doctors. I think you're going to be hearing from business owners, faith leaders, and just rank and file members of our society and our communities talking about this, because it's been around long enough. I think that the argument that it's not affordable really is shown to that it is affordable, that there are solutions that are available for each state has their own potential recipe for extending healthcare. And there is a Mississippi solution, and I have great confidence in our lawmakers that they can look at all the different types of flavors of healthcare expansion that are out there and then come up with one that fits Mississippi.
Dr. John Godet is a pediatrician in Hattiesburg and is a former president of the Mississippi chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Dr. Godet, thank you for talking with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you, Coach.
Coming up, Mississippi's economy gets red hot, then cools off in Corey Miller's latest forecast. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB public media app.
This is Mississippi Edition. I'm Karen Brown. Mississippi's economy is in a weird place. It took a hit during COVID, but weathered the pandemic better than much of the country. That's likely due to Mississippi's relatively low dependence on its service sector. Early evidence also indicates the state is now getting back to an economic normal pretty quickly. Corey Miller is the state economist. He speaks with Desiree Frazier.
In our latest forecast, we expect real GDP for the state will increase about 5.5% for all of 2021. That would be the largest annual increase we've seen since the early 1990s. And then we think after that, we will return to more of a pre-pandemic growth trend, probably annual growth of just under 1% in 2022 and again in 2023. So that's kind of our short-term outlook.
And what does that mean for the average Mississippian?
Well, it means our economy is growing. We expect it to rebound in 2021 from last year as most things reopen, and we got assistance from the federal government that allowed people to spend more money. We've had more businesses attempting to hire workers. More people are employed this year than they were last year. We're still below where we were prior to the pandemic, but we are on a growth trend, and we think it will continue through 2021 and into 2022, but that it will slow a little bit.
You said the growth would be under 1%.
In 2022, yes.
That's lower than it was pre-pandemic, is that right?
It's about where we were. We had not had growth over 1% in a year since the end of the Great Recession. 2021 will be the first year, if our forecasts are, you know, anywhere close, the first time we've had growth of more than 1% in a year since the end of the Great Recession.
How is the state doing in terms of sales tax revenue?
Our sales tax revenues have been doing very well. Haven't seen the finals on September as of yet, but through August, sales tax revenues have been continuing to grow very well. I think a lot of that has to do with the stimulus that was received from the federal government, as well as just the general recovery in the economy and the opening up of more businesses that we've seen.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you that's important to share about the outlook for next year?
I will mention one thing on inflation. That has been a concern in recent months, as we've seen some year-over-year increases that were the largest we've seen in quite some time. That's occurred for various reasons. Some of the supply shortages have led to higher prices, as well as we've had some pent-up demand, I'm not just talking Mississippi, I'm talking about around the country. As more states opened up earlier this year, that led people to spend more and demand more goods, and some of those goods that was said were in short supply, so that just kind of exacerbated some of the price increases. We do think, and the Federal Reserve has continued to say, inflation appears to be transitory. How long it's going to last, we're not exactly sure, but we think sometime in early 2022, inflation will return to levels we saw prior to the pandemic, as hopefully some of these issues will be resolved by then.
Would you define inflation?
Inflation is just an increase in the price level. Normally we have inflation every year, but the Federal Reserve sets a target of around 2% a year. They think that's consistent with economic growth. But when we see inflation get up to the levels we've seen in the year-over-year changes of around 4 and 5%, that tends to have some negative effects. For most of the last two decades, we haven't really seen strong annual inflation, certainly not like we saw at the end of the 70s and the early 80s. So inflation has not been a huge concern in our economy in recent years, so that's kind of why the recent uptick in prices has been a bit more prominent for a lot of people this time.
And what do you see the inflation rate at right now?
We think for 2021, the inflation rate is going to be just over 4%. Again, historically, that's not that high, but we haven't had much over 2% in a year, in a long time. So people are feeling the impact of that. We think by next year for 2022, it will be in the 2 to 2.5% range, fairly close to where we were prior to the pandemic, but maybe just a little bit higher than it was.
Corey Miller is Mississippi's state economist. Coming up, we return to our series on diabetes in Mississippi. This is Mississippi Edition on MPB Think Radio.
This podcast is a local production of Mississippi Public Broadcasting and depends on the support of listeners like you. If you can, please donate today at mpbonline.org. And thanks.
This is Mississippi Edition. I'm Karen Brown. On yesterday's show, we heard the first part of Frank Henn's story. Frank is a Mississippi native who was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when he was 17.
My pancreas decided to quit making insulin.
Yeah.
It's hereditary. I've got, on my dad's side of my family, I mean, it goes pretty deep. And then my mom was adopted, so we don't know, but she died early of health problems too. So I've seizured out in a restaurant, knocking out the coffee station. I've seizured out in another restaurant, like just not getting breakfast fast enough after taking my insulin, those kinds of things.
Per the most recent data from the State Department of Health, Frank is one of more than 300,000 Mississippians living with diabetes. The majority of those people are type 2 diabetics. Dr. Stephen Farrow is an endocrinologist based in Biloxi.
Broadly speaking, scientists will think of this in more detail. Type 1 diabetes is the absence of insulin. Your body is unable to make insulin. Type 2 diabetes, your body makes insulin, but it's not enough. For various reasons, the insulin your body makes does not control your blood sugar. Where in type 1, you don't have any insulin at all. Type 1 usually affects younger individuals, children, could be congenital even. Type 2 generally affects older people and is frequently associated with significant overweight or obesity. There is a third type of diabetes where the body doesn't produce insulin either, but that's relatively rare, and those are cases where the pancreas is actually destroyed by some toxin, like excess alcohol.
Is it fair to say that type 1 cannot be prevented and type 2 can, based on lifestyle choices?
Speaking today, there is greater likelihood of preventing type 2 diabetes because it is considered a chronic progressive lifestyle disease. Type 1 diabetes is a little bit more difficult, although we are making inroads and ultimately hope to be able to prevent that as well.
Is one type of diabetes more dangerous than another, than the other?
The brain requires insulin in order to burn blood sugar, which is its fuel. Without insulin, the brain could potentially starve. There are other organs in the body that also require insulin. Tremendously high levels of blood sugar can be extremely toxic to various tissues in the body. So depending on the presentation, the stage of the blood sugar when the person presents, either type of diabetes could be significantly detrimental or fatal.
As I understand it, type 1 diabetics will always have diabetes, no matter what. What about type 2 diabetics? Can they become non-diabetic?
They can. They can. Unlike type 1 diabetes, as current theory holds, type 2 diabetes is considered a chronic progressive disorder. Once you develop the diabetes, it will always be there. But do you have to continue to treat the diabetes? That's a different story. There are numerous tales of individuals who follow lifestyle modification programs, such as the CDC-endorsed diabetes prevention program, education on diet, education on physical activity, education on handling stress, and other types of exposures, interacting with your healthcare professionals, which allow you to develop a more healthy and diabetes-avoiding lifestyle. By emphasizing natural beverages and fresh produce and appropriate physical activity and optimizing your body's weight, you can actually decrease the likelihood that your blood sugars will rise to inappropriately high levels and eventually discontinue medications if you're successful. And this is not uncommon. This happens frequently.
Does heredity play a part in diabetes?
Yes. Both type 1 and type 2 diabetes are known to have hereditary components. And you might be surprised to learn that the genetics of type 2 diabetes may have an even stronger relationship than those in type 1.
Mississippi leads the nation, or is very close to leading the nation, in the number of residents with type 2 diabetes, and I believe obesity as well, which you have made a connection to. But there's also a high rate of children with diabetes. Is that unusual for a child to develop type 2 diabetes at such a young age?
Yes, but we're seeing that more and more. 4 in 10 Mississippians have obesity, but 1 in 5 Mississippi children have obesity, and this is one of the highest levels in the nation. We are seeing more and more of these children with these high obesity levels or high body weight levels presenting with diabetes as well. So that had been very unusual in the past, but it's becoming much more common.
Let's say that someone has type 2 diabetes and they don't realize it, or they're ignoring their symptoms and they don't see a doctor for some time, and they've been walking around with excessively high blood sugar levels. Where are they physically when they see a doctor? Are they in a dangerous condition?
Yes. Are they in a critical or emergency condition? That depends on the individual, but are they in a dangerous situation? Yes, they are. There's a significant number of percentage of the population walking around with pre-diabetes. And so those individuals, if they don't change their lifestyle soon, will actually develop frank diabetes. However,
could you define pre-diabetes for us, please?
Pre-diabetes are individuals who have blood sugars beyond the normal range of roughly 110 to 120 milligrams per deciliter. And that's just the number, which changes periodically. Pre-diabetes are individuals who have numbers higher than that. And those are individuals who probably already have insulin resistance. So their insulin levels to maintain even that level of blood sugar is higher than normal. Those individuals, if they don't correct their lifestyle, if they continue to gain weight, eat foods that are high in blood sugars and challenging in terms of causing insulin secretion, are likely to develop diabetes over time. Many individuals are walking around with diabetes actually and don't know it yet. So we understand that there's a large population with diabetes, but many diabetics have diabetes and are not aware of it. They may have some symptoms like increased urination, sometimes weight loss, but people may ignore that because these may be relatively minor. So potentially you could walk around for months or even years with diabetes and not be aware of it. So for that reason, I say having undiagnosed diabetes can be dangerous but not catastrophic for everybody.
Plenty of factors exacerbate the underdiagnosis of diabetes in the state, but even Mississippians with a diagnosis often face an uphill battle to good health. More tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Mississippi Edition podcast from MPB News and MPB Think Radio. Don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already, and if your app lets you, leave a comment or review. We really do appreciate it. Remember, you can always get in touch with MPB News on Facebook and Twitter, and fresh episodes of the podcast are posted every weekday morning. I'm Karen Brown. Thanks for listening. This is Mississippi Edition from MPB Think Radio.